Hello and welcome to the Health Innovation Podcast produced by the AHSN Network. In this episode, we're going to hear about an innovation aimed at improving the diagnosis and care of asthma patients. This is another of the rapid uptake products which the AHSN Network is supporting to spread throughout the NHS through the Accelerated Access Collaborative. Our host is Dr. Phil Jennings, a GP, the Chief Executive of the Innovation Agency, and the lead for the Academic Health Science Networks on the rapid uptake products. Phil talks to severe asthma sufferer Emma Thompson, whose treatment changed as a result of using the innovation, which is a breathing test called Pheno. And we're going to hear from Carol Stoneham, a senior nurse practitioner and a national leader in respiratory care.
Welcome, everybody, to the third in our series of podcasts about the rapid uptake products. Today, we're going to be talking about the Pheno test. That's the fractional exhaled nitric oxide test. You can see why we call it Pheno for short. And as usual, I'm joined by two guests, Carol Stoneham and Emma Thompson. So let me just start by asking the two ladies to introduce themselves. So Carol, shall we start with you? Welcome today. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, Phil. So I am a primary care nurse based in Gloucestershire. I wear a few hats, so I do about five different jobs at the moment. My main focus is my clinical work, which is around delivering a Pheno clinic in our region, which is really interesting.
Okay, super. Thanks, Carol. And Emma, over to you. Welcome to the podcast. Tell us and our listeners who you are.
Hi, my name's Emma and I am a brittle asthmatic who has had the benefits of using Pheno testing to get a diagnosis and be put onto the correct pathway. And I'm part of the working group for Pheno Rapid Uptake Programme.
Brilliant, thanks very much. So I think it'd be useful to get some background context about asthma first. So perhaps Carol, if we could start with you, I think it'd be helpful to understand a little bit more about asthma for those of us who are not medically qualified, and also maybe the distinction between asthma that we've probably all heard of and severe asthma, which in many ways is almost like a separate condition of its own.
Yeah, so not understanding what asthma is really common, and I think it's perceived as a really trivial condition that a lot of the population have, and indeed a lot of the population do have asthma. So the thing that underlies asthma is, if you imagine the lungs and you imagine the tubes within the lungs, the linings of those tubes in the majority of people with asthma become inflamed and angry and they swell. And because they're in an enclosed space, they swell into the space that you would normally use to breathe in and out. And once these airways are inflamed and angry, the second thing that happens is there are some muscles that overlay those tubes and the muscles become really twitchy. So when the person comes in contact with something that sets them off, their trigger, and that's different in different people. So it can be infection, it can be smoking, it can be pollen, it can be stress. The list is long. Those muscles then go into spasm and close down the airways even further. So that's the basis of what asthma is. As I say, very, very common. Around one in five, one in four children have it, and about 15% of the adult population.
Okay, and how many people in that group are severe asthmatics?
So severe asthma, as you say, is a part of asthma, but it is a part that sometimes is poorly recognised, but needs to be treated in a different way. So severe asthma is asthma that, despite the right treatment being taken in the right way at the right time, still leaves the person with asthma with symptoms, with breathlessness, with cough, with lots of episodes when the asthma flares up and they might need to be admitted to hospital. And people with that type of asthma need to be seeing a specialist respiratory consultant, so somebody at the hospital usually, with an interest in asthma, with a view to actually adding in different treatments to try and get that asthma under control.
Okay, and I suppose it's worth pointing out that although it's rare, people still die of asthma in this country, even today in 2021?
Yeah, so sadly, around 1,500 people a year will lose their life to asthma. the shocking part of that is those are not necessarily people with severe asthma. They can be people with quite mild asthma that isn't being treated appropriately. So the people with asthma are usually the ones that are toddling along with symptoms. So they're getting breathlessness, they're getting chest tightness, they're coughing, but they expect that because that's part of their asthma, and that really isn't the way it should be. We should have a better grip on asthma, and we should be able to control the symptoms much more easily than that to make sure the patient is more safe and not at risk from coming to harm from their asthma.
Thanks, Carol. So Emma, you've been living with asthma for a long time. Tell us your story. How did it start, and how has asthma kind of changed your life?
So I was first diagnosed with asthma at the age of 11. And in my late teens and early 20s, it really wasn't very well controlled at all. In my mid-20s, and I had children, and my asthma seemed to stabilise, and it was very, very asymptomatic. And I managed to plod along quite well without most people even knowing I was asthmatic. And then 2.5 years ago, I caught the flu, despite having had my flu jab. And the flu then turned into a pneumonia, which triggered my asthma. And for the last 2.5 years, my asthma has been rather uncontrolled. I've had 29 admissions, most of which have been to high dependency.
Right.
And the longest of which being 23 days.
Okay.
So it really has been quite life-changing. I used to work. I can no longer work because nobody's going to employ somebody who spends that long in hospital and that many days away from the office. And then after the asthma attacks, you also have to bear in mind it's the recovery period as well. So it's not just the attack and in hospital. For every day you're in hospital, Asthma UK suggests that you should take like 3 days to recover. So it can be a very long recovery process afterwards as well.
And I suppose for the benefit of the listeners, Emma, I mean, obviously I can see you and you still look like a young woman. So you would otherwise be working and very productive. So that's surely been a massive impact on your livelihood and your lifestyle.
Yeah, it has been. And psychologically, it's been almost as hard to deal with as the symptoms of the asthma. I'm 43, I've got children, I've got a dog. All I want to do on days like today is go out for a nice walk with the family. And I don't have that ability. I can't maintain the house on my own because I can't do certain household chores. And my life is really, you know, my husband's become my carer. My children's life has changed because they've had to know how to care for me in some respects as well. So it has made a huge impact.
And are you still able to work at the moment, or has that your employment been affected as well?
I was in recess when I had an email from my boss saying that my position was no longer viable because I wasn't able to have the attendance. So it's hard to find employment. So for me, being part of the working group on the Rapid Uptake Programme has been great because it's given me something else to do. But it's also about asthma, which is something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, okay. And I'm sure that's had a psychological impact as well. I mean, we recognise that for most people who've got a long-term condition, that has an impact on their mental health. And from what you're telling me about your job and your family, that must have been really tough for you.
Yeah, it has been. It's been really tough. I've had some really dark days. Days when I sort of said to my husband, you can go if you want because I'm not the woman you married. And it's really tough. It's not the assumption of take two puffs on your blue inhaler and you'll be fine. It really is. It affects every aspect of my life. And to look at me, I don't look ill, but it's one of these hidden disabilities that's not great.
Yeah, sure. And I was actually going to ask you about that. So again, I suppose most of us are familiar with seeing people with inhalers of various different colours. So what does your treatment schedule look like now? So in a typical day, what would you be taking to help with your asthma?
In a typical day, I would start the day by taking my prednisolone steroids. They're not great. They're not nice to take. They also have huge side effects, weight gain, your mood, your sleep. So it's very hard. But at the moment, my body has become so used to them, I can't be without them. So we're on a very slow weaning program. I then take two inhalers four times a day. And I also have nebulizers that I take four times a day, where it's compressed air, that so it goes directly into your lungs.
Wow. Okay. So, and you've been on steroids for how long continuously now, Emma?
2.5 years.
Wow. Okay. So anyone listening who takes steroids will know what an impact that must have had. So, I mean, thanks for sharing that with us. So let's come to Carol. So Emma's story, is quite shocking in a way, Carol. How does that fit in with other patients that you see with asthma? Is that a typical story, or where does that fit in the spectrum of the disease, would you say?
So thankfully, that's not a typical story. And you can hear from what Emma said how awful that is for somebody that is so, their whole life is affected by it. But the majority of people's asthma is not as severe as Emma's and is not as difficult to control as Emma's. So the majority of people would be fairly well controlled. When I say well controlled, what I mean is they shouldn't really know they have asthma. They should have no symptoms. They shouldn't cough. They shouldn't wheeze. They shouldn't avoid activity or exercise. They shouldn't wake up at night. And if they do check their some people use something called a peak flow machine to blow and see how much they can blow out, should be near normal. And the other thing is that these awful episodes of being admitted to hospital, never knowing when it's going to happen, again, is not the norm for the majority of people with asthma. The majority of people with asthma will take their preventative inhaler. So going back to what I was talking about, the inflammation, that damps down that inflammation. So when you take a dose, you don't feel it working, but it's damping it down and opening the airways back up. So that's regular, and that's usually twice a day. And then they have a separate inhaler so that if they do suddenly get an attack, when they feel suddenly short of breath, when they're coughing, when they're wheezing, that's when those muscles are squeezing down. And the blue inhaler just very quickly, within a couple of minutes, releases those blue muscles and holds them, those muscles and holds them open for a couple of hours. But that strategy of just using the blue inhaler is incredibly dangerous, because the underlying problem, as I say, is inflammation. So the absolute key to people with asthma that isn't as bad as Emma's is that they need to use their regular preventative inhaler to keep things under control.
Okay. So thankfully, Emma, despite that really difficult period that you've been through, I think things have started to improve and change. So tell us about what it was that made the change for you and why things are improving right now.
After 12 months of in and out of hospital with consultants telling me that it was anxiety, not asthma, and not really understanding my symptoms, because I don't always have that typical asthmatic wheeze that people associate. So when I would turn up at hospital and say, I can't breathe, they'd say, well, you're not wheezing, you're fine. But eventually I saw a consultant who said, I know the consultant you need to see, who is based at another hospital, but within the same healthcare foundation trust. I was referred to her, and she has put me into a completely different place. She listened, she believed me, she recognised my condition, and she then suggested that I take the FeNO test. And because the FeNO test was able to, and it's the only way they can really measure how much inflammation is in your airways. So whilst I'm saying they're inflamed, because it's not visible, it's very hard for doctors to diagnose it. So by having the FeNO test, they were able to see, using numbers, exactly what was going on inside. Which then led to a change in my treatment and a referral to a tertiary consultant who has put me onto the asthma biologics, which are now hopefully going to help.
I hope so. We've done a podcast before with another sufferer who's been on biologic, and certainly that was a transformation for her. So I very much hope that's the same story for you, Emma. And the pheno test itself, so again, some of us are starting to use pheno, but I think it's fair to say it's not widespread yet. So just for those of us who've never heard of a pheno device before, tell us what that's like to use. What does the test involve?
To use a pheno test is relatively simple. Effectively, when you're exhaling into this machine, you blow as though, I always think of blowing the top off a hot chocolate. It's just a gentle blow. It's, you don't have to completely puff and trigger symptoms and coughing. It's very gentle to take. And you blow out for 10 seconds and then the machine does its magic and it produces a number that is able to tell the physician or the nurse exactly what's happening.
Okay. And you've used that test both for a diagnosis and monitoring, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So it was used in the early stages when I was being diagnosed. And then every time I go to chest clinic, I repeat the test because it gives them an idea of whether the medication is effective or not.
Okay. And when was the last time that you were in hospital? Have you seen an improvement there yet?
The last time I was in hospital was back in June.
Okay.
So that was 19 days, so it was quite a long one. But it has been 6 weeks out, so we're hoping.
Everyone's got our fingers crossed for you, I'm sure.
Thank you.
So, Carol, if pheno had been introduced earlier into Emma's pathway, what difference might that have made?
Yeah, so pheno is a really good test for, as Emma says, measuring the inflammation in the airways. And the other tests we have don't do that. They simply measure airflow, so airflow and resistance, if you like. So pheno is something I've been using personally for probably 12 or 13 years. So I'm a very early adopter of this. And it's something I use with patients for diagnosis and for monitoring. And you can also tell whether or not a patient's taking their treatment by checking a pheno test. So it's got an additional sort of benefit there. And I think if Emma had had that benefit much earlier in her pathway, the initial diagnosis would have been more timely, so it would be made more quickly. Being told somebody doesn't believe you can't breathe when you're in an accident emergency department and you can't breathe is shocking, to be honest. But had they been able to measure that, then that would have given that actual number of the inflammation. And likewise, when you're trying to increase somebody's treatment or add in different treatments, it's a really good test to guide what is an appropriate treatment to add in, because there are always choices. So to get control of somebody's asthma much more quickly makes them feel better, takes away that risk of hospitalisation and death, gives them confidence that you know what you're doing and actually you are there to help them. So I think it would have made tremendous difference had that been available much earlier in Emma's treatment journey. But as you say, it's not widespread. It is increasing, but it's not widespread. And it's, to me, it's that missing piece of the jigsaw when we're diagnosing and monitoring asthma.
Okay. And given this is an audio recording, just tell us what's a pheno machine like? How big is it? Does it sit on the desk? Is it a whole room? Just so people understand what we're talking about.
So there are three on the market. There are two that are NICE approved. So, and they're all similar. They're all small. So the one device is a bit like, I'd say, a fat iPad, about that sort of size. The other device is similar size, narrower, taller, a little bit thicker. They're portable. You can move them from room to room. They're light. They charge, so you don't even, you know, if you could, you don't even have to be plugged in with them. Really, really easy to use.
Excellent. Okay, great. So tell us what's happening then with pheno with regards to the rapid uptake product. So few enthusiasts, I think it's fair to say, who've been using pheno. Been a bit of a debate in primary care as to whether or not this is something we should adopt or not, but certainly more latterly, I think we've got on board with pheno. So what's happening nationwide now with pheno devices?
So in secondary care, the majority of secondary care sites, so specialist hospital sites, should have access to Pheno, so that isn't so much of a problem. But the majority of people with asthma are diagnosed in primary care at their GP surgery, and that's where we up until now, we haven't had Pheno. So there's, with the rapid uptake product programme, there's been one of the work streams working directly with Pheno and trying to get Pheno out into primary care so that patients at that point of diagnosis have access to the right test that will help them along their way. So we've got around 28 sites, I think it is, that have now been provided. Well, I say 28 sites, 28 projects that have been supplied with Pheno. 8 of those projects are much bigger than one practice. So for example, I'm leading one of the projects here, and we're working with 19 practices, and we'll be supplying Pheno to 19 practices. So it is really exciting. And I think, I feel like I've been telling this story for many, many years, and I've been banging my head against a brick wall, but suddenly everybody's saying, actually, this is the way to go. And the guidelines tell us it's the way to go. And we're all moving, hopefully, towards these diagnostic hubs. So the diagnostic hubs are just, we have what we're going to be calling a large community diagnostic hubs for very complex patients. But in primary care, we'll be looking at local diagnostic hubs for breathlessness. So that will be a point of care for the patient that is fairly local, where they can be referred when they present with respiratory symptoms and get the right test, which would include Pheno.
Okay. So, and again, just finally on the machines themselves. So, you know, I'm a GP, so I'm sitting in my surgery thinking, yeah, right, I'd like to offer Pheno either in my surgery or as part of my primary care network. Who should I be talking to explore that and find out some more information?
So the Academic Health Science Networks, the AHSNs, are leading this project, and there is an Academic Health Science Network in every region. There's somebody within that AHSN that will be interested in Pheno and will be able to work with you. The companies are great. They give you a lot of advice and training, and we're also putting together a national training programme for healthcare professionals so that you can add this into your current asthma expertise.
Super. And then, if we roll the clock forward, say 5 years, how do you see, what's your vision for primary care asthma diagnosis and management in light of Pheno? In an ideal world, what will that look like?
So in an ideal world, I would like to see these local diagnostic hubs for breathlessness established, so that if you present to your primary care practitioner, be that your GP, your nurse, your clinical pharmacist, whoever, and you say that you are suffering with symptoms of breathlessness, once they've ruled out an acute infection and, you know, the things that are short term, you'd be referred into one of these hubs, which will be, as I say, shared between about 5 practices, so very local, and you will have the right tests at the right time, so fairly quickly, performed by somebody, a healthcare professional that is trained, confident and competent in what they do because they do it all the time. So you will get an accurate, timely diagnosis of your respiratory condition, or referral on through the system if that isn't the appropriate place for you to be.
Okay, great. And so coming back to you, Emma, obviously the point of this is to make a difference to people suffering from asthma and to improve their lives. So in light of your Pheno test and the changes to your treatment, tell us what's happened to you.
So I have been listened to, I've been believed, and that psychologically, that is a massive thing. That is a massive deal. And it's great to know that these numbers that appear on the machine actually signify something and can show the physician or the practice nurse what's going on. And from here, now I am under the tertiary care. It's an hour away, but I don't care. I travel to the end of the world if it would help. And I am on the biologic medicine. The first trial didn't go so well, so we're starting a second one, which we're hoping will be more effective.
Okay. What problems did you have with that first one?
So although my blood showed that the medication was effective and did what it needed to do, symptomatically, I wasn't improving. And again, what's really important is they don't just look at the bloods and say, no, you're fine. They take you as a whole package. And because my symptoms weren't improved, then they said it wasn't successful. So we try a different one. And hopefully this one will help the symptoms.
Okay. And how long have you been on that one now?
I start it in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, right. Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, fingers crossed. I hope that goes well.
Thank you.
But clearly, your experiences inspired you to be a champion for Pheno. And so, again, thanks for talking to us today, particularly for sharing your personal story and being so honest and candid with us. We're really grateful for that. What else are you doing to help promote the use of Pheno around the country?
We worked through the working group. We have worked on a patient information leaflet to try and help them and to take away any fear that surrounds another breathing test. Breathing tests aren't pleasant for asthmatics or anybody with a chest condition. So if there's one that's not too bad to do, we'll take that gratefully. So it's just to try and reassure people that not only is it simple to do, it is also effective and can actually help your treatment path.
And your takeaway message for those people who are listening today, Emma, particularly for other asthma sufferers, what would that be?
Don't give up. Keep fighting. Keep fighting your own corner and believing your own body. And don't be afraid of taking a different test, because different tests can sometimes show the better things.
And if I could ask you the same question, Carol, again, what's your takeaway message, maybe for other professionals who are listening today for the programme and for Pheno?
I've increased to two messages, I think. So having listened to Emma, I think the first and foremost message is listen to your patients, because they live with this, they know what's going on, and they generally know better than you do about the way it's affecting them. So that's the first message. My second message would be that Pheno is the missing part of the jigsaw when we're trying to diagnose and monitor asthma. It is that hidden bit that you can't measure in any other way. And we wouldn't do that in any other disease process. We in any other disease process, we want as much information as possible. And it should be the same for people with asthma.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for your time today. I hope that if you're listening, as a patient, you're thinking about Pheno and talking to one of your primary care professionals about that. And if you're a GP like me and you're not offering Pheno in your area, then maybe that's a conversation with your local AHSN to see how we can help. I hope you've found that interesting. And Emma, good luck with the rest of your treatment. I hope it goes well. I look forward to working with you and you also, Carol, in the future. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emma Thompson and Carol Stoneham, and our podcast host, Dr. Phil Jennings. You can hear about another programme to help severe asthma sufferers in our previous podcast, which was about a range of therapies called asthma biologics. This series is all about the NHS Rapid Uptake products produced by the AHSN Network in partnership with the Accelerated Access Collaborative. You can find links to websites with more information on our podcast page. Do follow the Health Innovation Podcast to hear more about innovations in health and care. Thank you for listening.